Welcome to Let's Get To, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
So we are back on Let's Get To, and yeah, it's a little bit of a depressing episode in a way. We have used the sad version of Andy Bertelsen's Take Me Out to the Ball Game. You might notice that I tend to use that for things like, I don't know, seasons are ending or the Astros have been busted for stealing signs. I tend to show my emotional state by the version of that song that we use. But we do have a sad episode today. Baseball has been postponed. For those of you not following, and it's not just, you know, everybody's like worried about Major League Baseball. And of course, it's well documented how much I love the Astros. Everybody knows that I was so looking forward to spring training. I was unable to go. And it's a bummer and I'm sad and I wish it could work out. But just so if everybody's scoring at home, pretty much all forms of college baseball have been, they're using the word canceled, both at the conference level and then the NCAA has already canceled the College World Series. Part of me feels like that might not be as canceled as they say, since it's still, that isn't until June and there's still time to work this out. But for right now, it's canceled. Spring training is canceled for Major League Baseball. There will be a 2-week delay on the start of the season at minimum, which means that there is a delay for minor league baseball starting, who knows, at least, probably at least 2 weeks after that. They tend to follow 2 weeks. So we're going to have the director of communications for minor league baseball on the show next week for him to kind of fill us in with whatever information he has. But yeah, it's something that I want everybody to be aware of. With the way media covers it, we never know. And so we are excited to have a special guest to talk about it. Joining us on the show is the medical director of diagnostic microbiology and the medical director of pathology informatics at Houston Methodist Hospital. And he's the associate professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at Cornell University, Dr. Wesley Long. Dr. Long, how's it going?
Going well, James.
So I'm going to approach this like I'm an idiot. And okay. If you could just begin, explain me exactly what is COVID-19 that we're all kind of colloquially calling the coronavirus?
So, you know, the novel coronavirus that's known as the disease is known as COVID-19. The virus is actually officially named SARS-CoV-2, so you may see that used as well. But COVID-19 is kind of the most commonly used name now for the disease and the virus in most places. You know, this is a new coronavirus. And, you know, what are coronaviruses? Well, coronaviruses, typically, these are viruses that cause really the common cold. In fact, they cause about a third of the common cold cases in adults and kids around the world every year, the run-of-the-mill usual coronaviruses that we see. The thing about COVID-19 is that it's new, sort of similar to how SARS was new and MERS were new, were two new coronaviruses, and also similar to those. It's basically made the jump from animals into humans, probably in China and late in 2019. That's where the 19 comes from. And so because it's a new virus, new to humans, none of us really have any pre-existing immunity to it. And so we don't have any pre-existing immunity to it. And then we also don't have a vaccine for it. And then we also don't have any sort of effective antiviral therapy for it right now. There's a lot of research being done in those areas, but right now we don't have any of those tools to help us treat it or prevent it. And so that's sort of the issue with it. And then comparing it to SARS and MERS, SARS and MERS both had very high mortality rates. So, they were frightening. But then the other good thing about SARS and MERS is that they both were not transmitted nearly as easily as COVID-19. And so we were able to kind of confine SARS to, a small number of cases and predominantly in China back when it emerged. And, MERS was, really poorly transmitted and was able to be limited to a small number of cases in the Middle East and still circulates a little bit there, but very, very rare. So COVID-19, the big differentiator is that, it has a much lower mortality rate than SARS and MERS, but it's transmitted far more easily, which is one of the reasons now we're seeing it spread globally. Really it is, just a little bit of a long-winded answer, but the thing about COVID-19 is that in most people, it causes a common cold, fever, cough, maybe some shortness of breath. It's just that for people who are immunocompromised or on immunosuppressing drugs, people who are older with weaker immune systems, older than 65, they can have quite a bit higher mortality rate than younger people. And so those people are at higher risk for having a severe infection with COVID-19.
One of the reasons for having you on is because, in my regular walk of life, I'm a filmmaker. I'm kind of consumed with how media is done. And depending on what media you watch, we're all either going to die tomorrow or it's not a big deal. And so the big thing everybody says was it's just like the flu and more people die of the flu. How is it or is it not like the flu?
So it's different than the flu. The flu gets used a lot as an analogy for COVID-19 because it's sort of the closest sort of severe respiratory pathogen that people have heard of. So it's tempting to use it to draw analogies. I initially did that, and then I've kind of stepped back from that because the analogy breaks down in several very important ways. One thing that's very important to realize is that the mortality rate from influenza in the U.S. is fairly low, even in severe years. It's typically the fatality rate's less than 1%. Data coming out of China and other places, we're estimating the mortality rate of COVID-19 around 3% overall. But if you look at the age mortality rate broken down by age, it can be over 10% in people over 80, for instance. And then, there's still a lot of sort of unresolved questions about, what the actual mortality rate may be. So it's actually more, COVID-19 is actually, has a higher fatality rate than influenza. And then again, influenza, we have a vaccine to limit spread. Influenza, we have Tamiflu and antivirals to help when people get infected, help treat the disease, help also prevent spread. We don't have any of those tools to help with COVID-19. And so because it is so easily transmitted, and this is one of the other things, influenza typically makes people very ill. So when you get influenza, it's the kind of thing you kind of feel like you got hit by a truck. You have, muscle aches all over your body. And in generally with influenza, if you get sick with influenza, you're probably going to stay home. You're not going to go to work. You're not going to go to school. You're not going to go out in the community and spread it. One of the problems with COVID-19 is that for a lot of people, it causes just sort of a mild illness. Seems like maybe just a common cold. Maybe some people might even write it off as allergies. And so those people are much more likely to go to the store, go to school, go to church, go to work with a cough, write it off and then transmit it to their coworkers or peers, whomever they might come into contact with. And so that is another important difference that helps us limit the spread of flu that is not going to help us with COVID-19 because, again, it is for so many people a mild illness. Now, the problem is the reason why when you look in the media, it's very difficult to communicate risk. And I've learned a lot about risk communication through this process, and I keep refining how I do it. But it's important not to tell people everything's going to be okay. You don't need to worry about this because you lose all credibility then if it comes into your community and people start getting sick or, then suddenly people say, well, you told me it was going to be fine. So back in January, I was telling people, this is this new disease in China. We need to keep an eye on it. We need to be prepared. It may come here. It may spread here because it was really unclear if it was going to be able to be contained in China or not. And then that message evolves as, we begin to see global spread and we begin to see, spread into other countries. And then as we begin to see spread, into the U.S., the messaging then has to evolve to, okay, it is spreading and here's what we need to do to help prevent the spread. And that's where things like social distancing and those sorts of measures come into play. Because, again, influenza causes a lot of disease in the U.S. It causes, a significant number of deaths in the U.S. every year, 10, 12,000 deaths. And influenza can actually cause deaths in healthy young people, which it appears so far is a little bit less common with COVID-19, although there have been some notable cases of young people. There was a relatively young doctor in China, Lin Wuang, who was one of the first people to kind of sound the alarm bells at his hospital. He's an ophthalmologist, about seeing this new pneumonia, and actually ultimately contracted the disease and then kind of surprisingly passed away with it, which was a big surprise to everybody, because the going thought was, well, he's in his 30s, I think it was, he should be okay. And by and large, statistically, that's true. But, there are cases like that. And then it's a big threat for people who are immunocompromised. I think there's a lot of people out there who take immunosuppressive medicines for different conditions, autoimmune conditions and things. Most of us probably know, but most of us probably know at least one person who is either, has hereditary immunodeficiency or is on immunosuppressive meds for one reason or another, and don't even realize it. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. So it's a new disease too. It can become a systemic issue of, is it going to overwhelm the health system? So although the individual risk is quite low, it can become an issue. If the individual risk is low, it can become an issue of, if we start to have a lot of severe disease, a lot of patients who need significant levels of care, ventilators, ICU beds, we don't have a lot of spare capacity for that in the United States. I mean, certainly we want to take care of all our patients. We're very patient-centered, put the patient in the center of everything we do, but that's the other concern as a system, at the very high population level is, can we try to prevent the sort of big influx of cases? Can we help slow the transmission so that, the number of severe cases gets spread out over time and our health systems are better able to cope with that. Because we have the capacity to do, we can do much better if we can keep the number of cases low enough that we can, work through it without getting overwhelmed. So that's where you see everything about social distancing and people talk about flattening the curve. That's what they're talking about.
So, I'm a relatively healthy, oh man, I turned 44. Never mind. It's not a therapy. You're not here to talk to me about it. So I'm a relatively healthy guy. Let's say I have what I think are symptoms. Is it then better for me to just basically quarantine myself and then ride it out and therefore not overwhelm a system? Or is it better for me to go to the hospital?
It is absolutely 100% better for you and better for the hospital and better for society at large. If you're a healthy young person and you have a fever and a cough or a fever and symptoms like this, it is 100% better. And I would say even more than that, it's imperative that you really stay home. As long as you, and here's why, again, there are no specific treatments. There are no specific therapies. So if you're young and healthy and you have a fever and a cough and you go to the ER, the only thing they're going to be able to do for you is, give you Tylenol or ibuprofen. They might test you for flu and make sure you don't have flu. And then, send you home. So, they're probably gonna send you home and tell you to stay home for 14 days anyway, on the off chance that you have COVID-19. Emergency rooms are very busy as it is. And then, it's also usually not unfortunately in the U.S., usually not a cheap copay. So you probably, if that's a motivator for people to stay home, I recommend it. The best thing to do really, if you do feel sick and you're home and you're at stable, if you want to call your doctor or, and ask about, if they want you to go get a flu test, at a, collection like a LabQuest or a Quest, collection site. Cause it is, but the thing about flu really, if you've ever had influenza, if you haven't had influenza, flu really hits you like a Mack truck. Like you go from feeling fine one moment to, again, high fever, muscle aches, body aches. If you have that presentation, you call your doctor, they may want to have you go get tested for flu. They may, depending on, we're really kind of, flu is trailing off right now. They may just call you in Tamiflu. That's up to you and your provider. But flu is very distinct. And so, and that's really the only thing that has a specific antiviral therapy. You know, if you have a common rhinovirus, common enterovirus, we're still seeing a lot of those, which are other common causes of cold. You're better off just staying home. Because the other thing, too, is you don't want to go to the ER without COVID-19 and then, you know, sit next to somebody in the waiting room who has it, who maybe doesn't have a mask on, or, you know, I mean, they should have a mask on. Anybody that walks into an ER with respiratory symptoms is probably going to be given a mask right away. But again, you don't want to go in there and pick it up when you have maybe a common cold, and then you go in and, you know, use a door handle that somebody has touched and then pick up the disease if you don't have it. So it's really better to stay home if you're sick. Stay home from work, stay home from school, church, the store, you know, wash your hands frequently, you know, try to, you know, keep we talk about 6 foot distance is about the distance that respiratory droplets can go. You know, wash those high touch surfaces, with, you know, the things like doorknobs, bathrooms, you know, just try to keep everything really clean, try to keep from spreading it to your family members. You'll probably, you know, you'll probably be fine, over time.
So just a few more questions. I know that you're slammed because you're very busy down there. Any truth to the whole it's going to die off in the summer as the weather gets warm thing?
So that's a very good question. That's something we don't really know the answer to. And it's, you know, the reason people think about that or suspect that is that, you know, coronaviruses, the other four human coronaviruses that we have that circulate around the globe cause, you know, a third of the colds, again, in adults and kids. Those tend to be very seasonal. They tend to be much more common in the winter, in the late spring, or the early spring, rather. And they tend to sort of trail off into the late spring. They still kind of circulate through the summer, but they're just kind of at very low levels. So that gives us some hope. Well, it could give some hope that maybe it's going to start to trail off as we go into summer. The issue is that the other thing that we don't know is if this virus is going to kind of be a one-off like SARS, and it's going to go, you know, get contained or basically disappear after it kind of has its initial run, or is it going to become the fifth kind of common circulating human coronavirus? And at which point, you know, at some point, all of us will have been exposed to it or possibly infected with it and be immune to it. And then as, you know, new people are born and new people come along, you know, they'll pick it up as a cold as kids. Again, it's very mild in kids, and then they'll grow up with immunity to it, perhaps. So that's the question is, you know, even if it, one, I don't know if it's going to go down in the summer, again, because it's so new and because we just don't know the seasonality of it. But the other thing too to remember is that when it's our summer, it's winter in the southern hemisphere. So it's very common that I would suspect that even if it does trail off for those of us in the northern hemisphere in the warmer months, that it's probably going to keep circulating in the southern hemisphere and then come back around in the fall as we enter into winter, and we'll start seeing cases again. The question at that point will be how many people have already been exposed, already immune.
Have we developed antivirals and things? Yeah.
Right. And at that point, hopefully we'll have identified some antivirals. There are some, you know, there's multiple drugs in clinical trial right now to try to treat it. We probably won't have a vaccine by then. A vaccine would probably take a year to 18 months, probably longer. A year to 18 months would actually be miraculous. But there is a good chance we'll have better antiviral therapies detected by then. There's also, we should have much better testing capabilities by then as well, because the commercial vendors will have been able to roll out tests for it by then and get them FDA approved.
All right. So just a few more questions then. So this is a baseball show and a sports show, and I know that you're a big sports fan. That's actually how we know each other. And you know, we've seen the dominoes fall with like South by Southwest and the rodeo down in Houston and the NBA, now MLB. Just real quick, explain to people that this is absolutely a necessary step to keeping this from getting worse.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit in that question.
So yeah, I just want to make sure that people know that this is a necessary step to keep this from getting worse.
Right. So the whole social distancing, which is why you're seeing all these large events get canceled, it's really important. And it's important, you know, it plays into this, what we talk about, you know, flattening the curve or trying to spread out the cases. so that we don't get slammed with, you know, a large number of severe cases. You know, sort of like what we're seeing in Italy right now, where their health system's really being overwhelmed. You know, it's really important because we have these large gatherings. Again, this illness doesn't make, it makes most people, you know, mildly ill. And so they're likely to still go to see the concert or the baseball game. And then, you know, I told you earlier, you know, respiratory droplets, which are infectious, can travel about 6 feet. So if you think about, you know, you're sitting in a baseball stadium, if you drew like sort of a radius of 6 feet around you, you know, how many people would be sitting around you and they're talking and eating and coughing, you know, and then it's very, you know, and you're eating and you're putting your hand to your face, you know, constantly. You know, it's one thing we talk about hand washing and not touching your face, and everybody realizes now how hard that is. But, you know, if you think about it in the context of a baseball game, I mean, it's virtually impossible to sit in a stadium in like a bubble and protect yourself from everything. And there's a lot of the other thing is all the what we call high touch surfaces. So, you know, somebody coughs, they get virus on their hands. Virus does very well on skin, you know, and then it does very well on hard surfaces. So you think about, I mean, baseball stadiums are full of hard surfaces, handrails, door handles, all the porcelain in the bathroom, the sinks, even the seats are typically just hard plastic. And so virus does very well, you know, on those surfaces. And so, and if you touch any of those surfaces and then touch your face, you're going to transmit it to yourself. And so, and it's impossible. We talk about, you know, you can clean things more often, you can get, you know, deep, but in the course of a 4-hour baseball game, you know, there's no way you could possibly clean everything and protect everything from everybody. And so that's really the issue is that, you know, if we can limit people to smaller gatherings, small groups where they're not, you know, crammed so close together, if we can keep sick people home, it can help limit the spread and help slow the spread. Again, we're probably, you know, many people are still going to get infected over time. But the idea is, can we keep that at a manageable rate and more of a linear rate? Rather than an exponential sort of spread, so that the health system can cope and all of our, you know, sort of systems can cope. So it's you know, the economic impacts of it are huge. I feel for that, you know, I feel for, you know, I think we have to really, you know, look at, you know, how can we help support people that are being impacted? You know, a lot of people, the Houston Rodeo got canceled. A lot of those vendors now are, you can find lists online of how to buy from them online, that kind of stuff. That's great. You know, restaurants are really being impacted. It's tough. It's tough. And I think everybody has to decide, you know, what kind of, you know, for gatherings that aren't canceled, it can be tough decisions about what you're going to do. But I would say, you know, you want to think about, you know, how many people are we talking about? What sort of a space? How close together? Am I going to be able to wash my hands? Am I going to be able to, you know, that's another thing. You know, we're trying to get away from handshaking, which was really awkward. You know, I'm going with like a little bit of a head nod. You know, there's different strategies, but the social distancing is really, really important. I know it's frustrating, but I think this is really kind of an unprecedented event, really, in probably all of our lifetimes. Certainly, you know, I've been in healthcare now going on 20 years. So I've been through, you know, swine flu, SARS, MERS, Ebola, you know, and seeing sort of the preparedness for those. And this is definitely, this is a very definite, it's a very different feel than in any of those. And I think a much bigger issue for us in the U.S. than any of those other outbreaks have been. So, yeah, I think it's certainly an unprecedented sort of response, but I think it's really critical, and I think everybody has to do their part to help with that.
So outside of hoarding toilet paper, I mean, what should, like, washing hands? Would you say don't go to restaurants? Would you say, you know, don't go to the movies? I mean, those are still at some point typically smaller gatherings. So you think those would be okay? Or
I think you have to look. So my kind of rule of thumb is, you know, how many people, and, you know, what are your, you know, sort of available options and, you know, what can you tolerate? Right. So, you know, it's a big problem. You know, what I worry about with, restaurants or, you know, a lot of things is, you know, there's a lot of folks out there, working paycheck to paycheck, need money to make rent. You know, they aren't going to be able to stay home from work, right? If they have a minor illness, because they got to make rent. And so, you know, that's kind of the concern, is that, you know, if you go to, and, you know, I say this, I went to a restaurant last night, and I think some of it depends on how much local spread is occurring in your community. So I think, and also on our ability to test and detect that. So I think right now, I think there's local spread occurring in most, probably most communities. I think it's probably still on the low end. So right now I can tolerate a certain level of, you know, going out to restaurants, maybe having food delivered. But again, the risk is that whomever's preparing your food is, might be ill, could possibly transmit it to you. That's still something that we're learning about. But at the same time, you know, I feel like all of us, you're going to get tired of eating, you know, whatever you're cooking for yourself at home. And so you have to kind of think about what you can tolerate. And again, and I would say, if you're one of those high risk people, if you're over 65, if you have a chronic illness that makes you at higher risk, the CDC has a whole webpage about high risk individuals. If you're immunosuppressed, I would be much more stringent about, you shouldn't go out, don't go to restaurants, don't, you know, if you're young and healthy, again, it's just, you can think about, you have to think about the risk of, okay, if I go do this and I get infected, can I stay home for 2 weeks? Can I, you know, can I tolerate this? Do I have the resources for that? So it's a very tricky thing. But I would say, like, movie theaters, it's the irony is that back in the swine flu outbreak, there were a lot of school cancellations, and one of the things that happened was they canceled school. Everybody went to the movies. Everybody went to the mall. So people still got sick, and then, you know, it's like pretty well documented. And so, like, certain, like, settings like that, again, where you can't really control, like, who's sitting around you. There's a lot of high touch services. I'd be a little bit more cautious about. I would, you know, although right now, I mean, if people stop going to the movies, it could be, if there's just three people in the theater, you're fine, right? But it's kind of hard to predict that.
I'll just buy a whole row.
Yeah, exactly. Just buy a whole row. Buy the whole row out. So it just kind of, it depends, you know, if it's less than 15 people, if you're going to be able to maintain sort of that 6 foot distance, if you're going to have easy accessibility to water and soap to wash your hands, you know, if you're, again, if you're young and healthy, and if you get sick, you can stay home and miss work. Then I think, you know, you just have to judge for yourself. Is this particular thing I'm going to do, you know, worth it? Or is it something that I could avoid? And like I said, I went to dinner last night, I think, you know, but at the same time, if we get to the point where there's a lot of local spread, you know, it may be that, and you may get guidance, there may be guidance from, you know, public health officials of, hey, don't do these things, or, things are going to close. That's one of the things that some of these decisions get made for us. I mean, I've had a lot of people text me and ask me, hey, should I go to this concert, or hey, should I go to this sporting event? And then, you know, 6 hours later, it's canceled. So I think,
every other day. Should I go to spring training?
Yeah. It's that kind of thing, you know, so sometimes, so luckily some of these hard decisions are getting made probably for us, but you know, every sort of everything we do, you know, every time you get into your car in traffic, you're making like a lot of little, you know, risk judgments, and not without even thinking about it. And so I think it's just, you know, it's a little bit more in our forefront of our mind, trying to sort of evaluate the risk and evaluate it realistically. But there is definitely a trade-off between, you know, like what you can tolerate and you know, what makes life livable. So,
well, speaking of what makes life livable, we'll leave with a little bit of a fun question. You are a notoriously large University of Texas football fan. You feeling good, Sam? Senior season, feeling like, are we turning it around?
You know, I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm always excited, right? Every season is a new, you know, every season is a new chance, right? So, I'm excited. I'm hoping going into the fall, this, COVID is behind us, and, you know, we can all go to DKR and watch a game, and, you know, watch Sam and the Horns, do their thing, go to work. Hopefully it all turns out well. So I'm excited.
Well, Dr. Long, thanks so much for taking the time for being not only on our show, but being just so present with information for the people that know you. I think it's really helpful to sort through a lot of what we're hearing. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, James. Have a good one.
And now the Big League Chew, an eye on the majors, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
And so we're excited on Let's Get 2 to welcome back two of the big league chiefs, Scott McIntyre, and this is a, you know, editor's note or whatever. You're going to notice that in later on in the segment, I refer to the fact that we had recorded a segment with Scott previous to news breaking. And so then we decided to come back and re-record with Scott. So the disclaimer that Scott had old news is now,
It'll be old Scott, the next 5 minutes,
going?
The way everything's moving along right now. I hate to be the bearer of bad news and bring something that is so hard to chew on, but, man, we are in completely uncharted waters, are we not, buddy?
Yeah, we are, and it's, you know, there's a lot of things that are kind of happening with this tangentially that I am not happy with. I think that some of the jokes people are making – Astros fans are making it, Yankees. Oh, look, a few more weeks for JV to get healthy, or a few more weeks for Stanton, or which, well, name a Yankee on the injured list, or that's potential injured list. And, you know, that's not the time to make this joke, because again, there is a reason why multi-billion dollar industries are taking hits in bottom lines. And I don't think it's all for perception. And, you know, I'm not here to cause panic, because I think we know pretty well what the virus does when people get it. It's just the transmission of it is so
dangerous.
Yeah,
it, you know, like you and I had talked about it, it transmits, it gets in your body, you don't know you have it for 10 or 14 days, then it shows up and you start seeing symptoms, and by that time, you know, how many other people have you domino affected and get infected as well. You know, major, like you, to your point, no, in a financially driven world, such as Major League Baseball and the other sports live in, there is no way that they're going to cancel the seasons or postpone seasons unless this is really, really serious. And a lot of people kind of dismiss it. And, you know, I'm no doctor, but they ought to go look up and see that a coronavirus is different than the H1N1. And what people are trying to, they're trying to avoid a Spanish flu outbreak like we had 100 years ago, where 40 or 50 million people died. That same thing wouldn't happen today. But man, oh, man, would it get people sick. And people who are elderly and aren't well, apparently, you know, it's like 20-25% mortality rate if they catch it. So I'm glad.
Right.
They're doing the right thing. I mean, it's really Major League Baseball, since we're only focusing on Major League Baseball, I will say that Major League Baseball was given.
Well, no, I think in this thing, I think it's fair. I mean, obviously our focus is Major League Baseball, but I think it's fair to discuss all of what the major sports are impacted, because I think a lot of them are driving. But yeah, I think it's fair if we want to talk, bring up NHL, bring up the fact that all of this actually happened because of the doofus for the Utah Jazz, who took this not so seriously and has infected at least one other teammate. I really think if that hadn't happened, you would have seen games with no crowds.
I agree with you. And that's what we were talking about yesterday, 24 hours ago when we recorded this, and then everything dropped. So the NHL.
Since on the lost segment, the B-side of the Big League
Chew. The recording that will never see the light of day. The NHL didn't have a choice, and the NCAA basketball tournament didn't have a choice, because they share arenas with the NBA. And the NBA, Rudy Gobert, who nobody knew his name,
point.
48
good
hours
point.
Ago, right? They know it now, because not only is he infected, but he infected a teammate. Thanks a lot. And was making fun of it a few days ago, touching every microphone in the room, making fun of the virus, touching every microphone and every recorder in the room. And so now you have a press corps that's freaking out because they may have it. So, I mean, it's moments like that make things crazy. But for Major League Baseball, you've got New York State, you've got California, the same groups of 500 don't gather, period. If anything, in my opinion, Major League Baseball should have put all the games on hold today while they made a decision, because there were Major League Baseball spring training games held today after the Florida governor had said, any group over 200 people, please don't congregate today. And a few hours later, the Marlins and the Cardinals played. To which, and this is the quote of the year, in my opinion, Matt Carpenter, the third baseman for the Cardinals, said, this felt like the most meaningless game in the history of the sport. And he's absolutely right. They shouldn't have had the game today. It's that simple. Now, Major League Baseball players, they're in spring training. The other guys, they're into their season, right? NBA, NHL, these guys, MLS, they're into their season, so they're either back home or they're wherever. But all professional baseball players right now, including the non-roster invitees, and I want to touch on them in a minute, but guys that know where they're going to – I know I'm going to spend my summer in Houston. I know I'm going to spend it in St. Louis or wherever, Chicago, wherever your major league town is. These guys have, in many cases, uprooted their family or parts of their family to come down to Florida for a month or for a few weeks or whatever it may be. They're now in limbo. What do they do? Do they stay there and see if you're restarting in a couple of weeks? There's talk right now amongst teams that players will still gather with coaches and still have practices because that's less than 100 people, even including non-roster invitees. So that's perfectly within the limits, and it's a controlled group. So that may happen. Do we stay in Arizona? Do we stay in Florida? Do we not have team practices? Do we go back home? Is it safe to travel? Should we travel? Are we going to run a bigger risk if we do travel? If you are a Major League Baseball player right now, you're scratching your head going, what should we do? And that's another place they're in uncharted territories. Now, for the non-roster invitees, these guys that were scrambling to try to make a big league team and come out of the Grapefruit or the Cactus League with a big paying job, they're really in limbo. Plus, these are the guys that don't have a lot of money to begin with. Do they continue staying in the Lakewood Super Village Inn by the lake? I mean, do they stay there at $20 a night or wherever they're staying at if they have to stay on their own dime? What do you do? It's a really weird spot for these guys to be in. And if any professional sport and the delay is a sign, the Chinese Basketball Association, delay, if they restart on time as expected, they will have stopped play for 10 weeks. And so even tickets 10 weeks.
So it does seem like going back to the NBA, the NHL, that was a part of it I never thought of, that the idea is they do share venues, and them restarting is going to be interesting because whenever they do restart, they're going to eventually spill into what was supposed to be their off seasons, in which other events had been scheduled. You know, for example, let's go to Major League Baseball. Let's say one of the things I've seen is that they would delay and get rid of the All-Star break, which I think is an all around not great idea. I think if any sport needs a break in the middle of the season, it's baseball. But I know that Def Leppard is playing at Minute Maid Park. So it does add a lot of complications when you do kind of.
Yeah, when the NHL sent out their notice to teams this morning, they also, so the NHL season, the Stanley Cup's usually decided in June. They told teams to also get with their home arenas and figure out a plan to play hockey through July. So while they don't know which steps they're going to take next, that in the NHL, I mean, there's like 10, 12 games, 14 games left for these teams. They're almost finished with their season. So, and the NBA is about in the same boat. So trying to figure this out right now, right at the end of the season, do you just scrap the rest of the regular season? Players are saying they'd be furious over that because there's teams scrambling that have just gotten healthy and they're scrambling to make the playoffs. So that kind of feels unfair. Do you just throw everything delayed? Well, then if you do, now do you delay your draft? Do you delay training camp next year? Do you change next year's schedule? I mean, it is truly a domino effect, and baseball is really, really, really fortunate, if you want to be honest, that it's happened before the season began, and they can really get out ahead of things. The other thing, I just want to throw it out there, there may be a 30 for 30 in the making that the coronavirus killed the second edition of the XFL. So 4 weeks into the XFL, and it's been doing pretty well by all standards, and they can't continue to have games if no other sport's having games. So, it's just a really weird time. And the PGA Tour is their biggest tour event. The Players Championship is happening this week. And after today, there's no spectators allowed on the grounds for the next 3 days. It's just really weird, man. It's 30 days without sports. The only good news is that next Wednesday, March 18th, at 9 p.m. on IFC, the final season of Brockmire starts. So we'll have 30 minutes of a baseball respite per week, and that's about it.
I'm going to do the world's most in-depth review of those episodes. That ought to be the function of the Big League Chew will be hour-long reviews of a 30-minute show. So speaking of the Major League Baseball season, now we know that baseball has experience with shortening the season. What do you think happens? Do you think we go to, say, 150 games? If we're able to start in April, like I think they plan to, which basically just erases the first 2 weeks for the Astros in specific is 12 games. Do you see them just sort of starting at that point and letting those first 2 weeks go away? Do you see a series of doubleheaders? Do you see I don't think you can start the playoffs any later. I don't think that you can have a World Series game in mid-November in Yankee Stadium. So what do you see happening when it comes to that?
The last time anything happened like this was 1995, and it was a strike that shortened the season, and it delayed spring training. And with the spring training delay, they went to 144-game schedule. So you have 2 weeks of spring training that is supposed to be taking place. Now, if nobody gets infected, and which, in all honesty, the likelihood of that is very, very small, that no major league player and their families are going to be immune to this when nobody else seems to be, or when massive groups of people don't seem to be. The chance of somebody getting it, probably going to happen. Well, if that happens, then you can't continue to let teams practice because the Astros can't practice because Jose Altuve's kid is sick, but we're going to let everybody else practice. That may seem right to people that aren't Astros fans, but to the general public, it's not right. So you can't allow that. So really, you've got to let the 2 week incubation period die down, and then anybody who's sick, you're looking at 30 days. I really believe you're looking at 30 days before you can resume things per normal. And then I think you can have a rushed 2 week spring training, perhaps, and that games will start at the end of April or the beginning of May. And I think at that point, then they have to look at something around 130, 140 game schedule, maybe 144 at the most. But then how do you rechange the schedule? Do you scrap the first series of the year, or do you get rid of intra-league series? I mean, the guy who makes the schedule to begin with, he and his computer program are probably pulling their hair out right now, not knowing which way they're going to have to go, but knowing that you're not getting in 162 games this year. It's just not going to happen. I have no clue how it would happen unless you're playing into December.
I think if you are going to be able to start it, in a month, let's say a month, which is what the minimum extension, I understand that's pie in the sky, but also a lot of things can change in that time period as well. So let's say for the sake of argument, you're able to do that. I do see the teams essentially quarantining themselves in their spring training facility, which will allow them. I mean, let's be honest, like you talked about baseball being lucky in this, in a lot of ways they are. Spring training was almost done anyway, right? There was a week and a half really left. Most of the teams have made the majority of the cuts they're going to make, so they at least have an idea of who's going to be on the 26-man roster. It seems to me like the best solution at that point would just be to let those 2 weeks go. I don't think you can take up off days for it. And again, I don't think anybody wants to go to a playoff game in a stadium with no roof in the north in late November. So it seems to me you play 150.
I don't see how you're able to do that and sequester teams and their families into a way that they have no contact with the public. It's long ago or the pie in the sky days when a bunch of players went down and they stayed in dorms. Right. You got families down there. You got kids down there. You got people around there. We're talking about something that's really hitting the coastlines and working its way to the center of the country right now. So I having seen MLS and NBA both say it will be at least 30 days before we resume anything, I think Major League Baseball, if they started back any sooner. So there's two things here. If they started back any sooner, they would be going against everybody else. And then if somebody really got sick or they made it worse, baseball take a huge hit. That's number one. Number two, guys were ramping up to be ready for the endurance of the season, particularly pitchers. And they weren't quite there yet. Now they got to back off. It's kind of like a NASCAR race. You know, a guy gets a run on the outside and then he has to hit the brakes, or a horse even for that matter. It's hard to get started again. I think the players still need that couple of weeks. Otherwise you're risking big injuries to people. And I don't think the MLBPA would be too fond of that one. So what you're talking about is the best case scenario, but I think more realistically, we're looking at 6 weeks before we see the start of Major League Baseball, at least with fans in the stadium.
So that's really only 2 weeks. But that's only 2 weeks longer than what they've already said. Like, I know that we're hung up on this. The NBA said a month from yesterday. Well, Major League Baseball said 2 week delay, but that's also, we were 2 weeks away. That still is a month. A two week delay for them is still a month because they weren't starting until March 26th.
Correct.
Or 27th.
If they scrap spring training. What I could see them happening is
I'm not sure that they're going to stop working on backfields,
right,
and all that stuff. I mean,
right,
they got to do something.
And that's kind of the limbo right now. And that's the point. I think players could so players with two different teams right now, I'm reading this, saying that their team has an optional workout tomorrow followed by two free days where logistics will be figured out, and that the general chatter is that workouts will continue at the team's own sites with players having the option to go home if they feel the need. All of that's going to be fine until the first case of coronavirus comes down in a major league clubhouse, and then everything will get shut down. But I just read that. I've got MLB Network on in front of me and was reading that from the screen.
Okay. So the other thing, obviously, Major League Baseball sets the tone and then drives everything in the baseball world going down. And one of the things that has occurred as well is that Minor League Baseball has also said they're going to delay their start. And I find that a little weird because Minor League Baseball, as we sit today, is a month away from starting. Like April 9th is when they were supposed to start. What you think, it's purely coronavirus? I mean, it can't just be purely coronavirus. There has to be a little bit of Major League Baseball also wanting them to delay.
Probably.
For other reasons.
I think it's 99% of it is due to the virus because rosters won't be finalized. So the AAA team won't be finalized. Therefore the AA team won't be finalized and yada, yada, yada down the line. So I think it is probably virus related, but also driven by MLB. Plus, if you're Minor League Baseball, if Major League Baseball starts 2 weeks late from March 26th, then if everything goes perfect, then April 9th or 10th, they're back in and playing. Minor League Baseball wouldn't have a clue who their rosters are and try to get logistics and figure out who's staying at whose house and whatnot with the host families. We're really flying by the seat of our pants here, and I'm trying to think of all possibilities and all ideas, but you know, the situation seems to change every 10 minutes, you know? So who knows, by the time this breaks the air, they may have decided they're delaying 4 weeks, or, hey, we found a cure that we shipped in from, or a vaccine that we shipped in from Australia. Man, there's no telling. There's absolutely no telling right now, but I really don't think we're playing games. I don't think you're playing major league games that matter until the end of April at best. Really don't.
So with Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball delayed, you think till the end of April, I'm always going to be a little bit more positive. I also thought that I was still going to spring training.
Well,
so there you go. One of the things that's interesting though is, you know, regardless of the situation, these minor league clubs are going to be okay and the major league clubs are going to be okay because so much is subsidized by the major league club, but independent ball. Now the Frontier League, which is not supposed to start until May, neither is the Atlantic League. They've released a couple of press releases and stuff like that, but they haven't obviously there's no reason for them to make a decision as far as whether they're going to start now, because they are now 2 months away from starting. What effect do you see on some of these leagues if they have to delay because of the virus?
Independent ball,
these leagues
specifically? I don't think they'll have to delay. I think they're just going to have to get their preseason stuff done in a very compressed schedule, rather than going from a light jog into a sprint. Because I know this time last year we were talking to the assistant commissioner of the Frontier League, and everything they do to ramp up, I think it's going to be okay, go. And they just have to take off in a dead sprint and try to get everything ready, which is a shame, because there's some teams in independent ball that are struggling right now. Where I find it also very interesting, we think about the collegiate wood bat leagues. There's no college ball. NCAA stopped college ball. So how do these collegiate teams figure out, who to bring in for the wood bat? How does Major League Baseball draft talent this summer? I mean, it's these little things. So, and I haven't even thought about that until we're right now on the phone. But how do you scout the talent if the talent isn't playing? It's going to be really, really weird, and it's going to feel really strange. We've talked about the crack and the ping. There's no ping. So there's no ping.
There's no ping.
There's no ping in baseball.
Right.
P-E-E-I-N-G or P-I-N-G. So it just feels really, really odd, and it's day one. I don't know. I mean, I'm seriously concerned I'm going to be in a fetal position in the corner in about 3 weeks, rocking back and forth with my thumb in my mouth, wondering, when are my sports coming back? It's about to get really weird. And Broadway's shut down too. So, I mean, you can't even enjoy a show tune.
Well, but I think that's the thing is I've already got a couple of ideas of stuff that we're going to do. We're going to do our best to be here. We have a very loyal fan base. I put a tweet up there that said, we're not going away. We're still going to do 2 episodes a week. I said something about how we might not be the podcast they deserve, but we're the podcast they need. And people are excited. So we might get weird with it. I think we're going to start with some basic stuff, but I got some ideas. So we'll keep talking baseball for people. And it's sad. It's depressing. But, all I can think is we just need to keep realizing that the anticipation gets a little longer, and that's very rarely a bad thing.
You think the NFL and Roger Goodell right now are just breathing a sigh of relief that they don't have to make a decision? This is a really hard decision. I do want to say this, even though I'm not a big fan of how Manfred handled things today, and he should have killed the games to start with, because instead 15, 20,000 people were at risk today with the games that were held. So they should have scrapped it sooner or put things on hold, but still, these are really, really, really difficult decisions that no commissioner has had to make, honestly, since 1919. And in 1919, the NHL was going to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals. It was tied 2-2 with one tie. They were going to the deciding Game 6, and because of the Spanish flu outbreak and a couple of players got it, they canceled the Stanley Cup last year. It has been 101 years since commissioners of any league had to make a decision like this on this scale. So I do recognize the difficulty that there is in that, and kind of step back and go, wow, that's 100, things don't happen very often at this scale. They just don't. They've happened one time in history.
And I do think that they've all been good and proactive. And I think as we've had people on the show already talking about it, it's the only right decision to make. But Scott, you know what? We're going to come up with some fun stuff to keep everybody entertained. Just again, thanks for jumping on for basically the second time in less than 8 hours.
You bet. And right now, I just got news as well that the University of Arkansas has suspended classes through the remaining of this semester. So if an SEC school isn't even having classes, there won't be.
Then it wouldn't be any different than normal.
No, I mean, our athletes, we they go to class. They go to class. Go, go, Astros.
Go Astros, a focus on H-Town hardball.
We are back here on Go Go Astros for the shifting sands, if you will, of the landscape that is Major League Baseball, and help navigating us through those changes is Andy Tomchesson. Andy,
easy how are for you to say.
Yeah, no, it was easy for me to say. How are you doing?
I don't have fever or a dry cough, so I'm doing better than a lot of people.
Yeah, and I get the excuse now to sing. Def Leppard made a point of pointing out the fact that you can sing the chorus to Pour Some Sugar on Me, and it's about 30 seconds. And they've even put out a graphic to time where you should be in the song in the hand-washing process.
I mean, there's so many songs to choose from, even if you're not a Def Leppard fan, which I don't know why you wouldn't be. But realistically, you're bringing music to a place where there's normally not music. And wouldn't that just make the world happier?
I think it makes the world happier. I've actually coming up with a new reality show called Washroom Karaoke. We'll see how that goes. So, you know,
James Corbin's going to have an issue with that.
He might have a slight issue with that. So we're going to drop this episode, in about 24 hours. And as I learned with Scott, when we record his bit yesterday, we had settled on topics and then I drove home 2 hours later, we recorded it and those topics were different, but where we're sitting right now. And again, this has changed since I recorded Scott's piece for the show tomorrow, that the NBA, due to a moron, has suspended their season for people are using the word canceled. And again, that's wrong. They have suspended. They will finish the season at some point. Mark Cuban has earned a lot of points by coming out and saying that his employees will be taken care of while they are out of work. Major League Baseball is having a conference call, I guess, tomorrow to figure out what they're going to do. But where do you see all of this as far as where we are now, like as far as the coronavirus? A lot of meatheads on Twitter are saying that this is just like the flu and what's the big deal? They're wrong. But where are you on all this?
Well, since we're not allowed to talk about the topic we don't talk about anymore, my main takeaway from Twitter last night was that the Astros somehow came up with the coronavirus. And honestly, it took a pandemic to keep people from talking about the Astros and their winter activities. So that kind of gives you a level of scale that we're talking about. It's an interesting place to be right now because we're all in limbo, and I think you and I probably expect the same thing, that there will be some disruption to the Major League Baseball schedule, even though to this point on Thursday morning, nothing's been announced and won't be announced until I guess they have this conference call that they've got scheduled for tomorrow. It's certainly something that doesn't need to generate a panic, but there does need to be awareness. And unfortunately, in this country, it takes your favorite rodeo being canceled for you to finally go, oh, is there something going on? Or for a lot of people outside of Texas, Tom Hanks has the coronavirus. So that is going to be the face of this disease. Tom and his lovely wife, Rita, just the same way that Magic Johnson, nobody really paid attention to AIDS outside of the LGBTQ community. And I know I got that wrong. Sorry. I apologize for the calls you're going to field in advance.
The fact that, I think, you know what, the fact of the matter that you made the attempt to get it correct is going to, I don't think anybody's going to care.
I hope so. No offense was intended.
Absolutely.
But it took somebody like Magic Johnson contracting the disease before anybody in the straight community paid any attention to it. Maybe Tom Hanks is the sacrificial lamb we need. Maybe not the one we deserve, but certainly the one we need.
nice, by the way.
You know, so I think ultimately this is a pause in a lot of athletic seasons, and it should be because we spent a lot of time obsessing over the intricacies of this game, and it is ultimately a game that people are paying a lot of money to play. And the best thing that you can do to prevent the continued spread of this disease is social distancing, it's washing your hands, is using common sense. And some of that's going to mean that you can't gather for a sporting event. And if that's the case, the benefit of the baseball season that is very long, and there are a lot of gaps now with the time off. And so I think it's not easy, but certainly doable to either play in front of no fans at the beginning of the season or postpone games until later in the season and kind of move some things around. And I think that's what we're ultimately going to see. So it sucks because I, like everybody else that listens to the podcast, can't wait for baseball to get started. But the overall health and safety of our populace and of the world populace is a lot more important than whether or not I get to see the Astros beat the Angels on March 26th.
Let's talk about some of the things that have been proposed and then where you kind of see it going. One of the things that I think has been the most asinine of proposals has been the idea that Seattle will move its games to a less affected area, but still play with fans. And so to me, that just means you're basically begging potential infected fans to travel to watch your games. And so it seems like if you're going to reschedule your game somewhere else, you do it without fans. That seems like the no-brainer.
Yeah, and if you're going to do it without fans, what's the point of rescheduling it somewhere else? Just play it in your home stadium. If there's no people, there's no risk of contagion. And I'm saying that as fully aware that I am not a doctor by any means and have no medical training whatsoever outside of Boy Scouts. But it doesn't make any sense. And it's people just trying to grasp at straws to pretend that life is normal. And I think it's okay to acknowledge right now that things are not normal. Things will get back to normal at some point, most likely, but right now they're not. And we need to, take it seriously, just like corporations all over the world are doing, just like schools all over the world are doing. And it's just kind of silly to think that, just because we're playing these games in front of a crowd in Arizona, that's going to be somehow better. The crowd is the issue, not the location of the crowd.
Would you advocate for postponing the start of the season, or would you advocate for just starting the season on time with no fans and then figuring out what to do with folks like me who finally paused? I mean, like, this has been a funny year. So we're sitting here Thursday morning. I have finally decided to go to spring training for the first time. I have had a relatively crappy school year. I'm looking forward to it like anything. And then I also broke down and, albeit a small one, bought a season ticket package. Both of those things are in jeopardy. I'm sorry. So what would you advocate? Would you prefer to see it played with no fans, or would you prefer to see it postponed?
I personally would prefer to see it postponed because I think athletics without spectators is silly at this level. If I want to go watch people with no crowd, I guess I could go down to watch a local Little League game, and that'd be okay. I think the determining factor is if the schedulers for Major League Baseball can fit in whatever games they postpone later in the year. And I don't have any insight to whether or not they can do that or not. And I think if they decide to open the season as scheduled on March 25th and 26th with the league going full bore with no fans, that tells you that there is no way to reschedule effectively. I think if they postpone, that tells you that they have a plan for rescheduling. And I think either way, you as a fan and me as a fan and whoever buys tickets is going to be made whole for these games. I don't think the Astros specifically, because I'll talk about them because I know them better than anybody else, are going to say too bad, so sad, like South by Southwest did. And that's a reality. I think South by Southwest caters to a different audience than Major League Baseball fans, and Major League Baseball fans are going to want their refunds, and they'll get refunds, or at the worst, they'll get credits for other games.
It seems like that's what most of us would want, yeah.
Yeah, and in some way we'll be made whole. The ticket-buying public will be made whole, and in the meantime, if they do play games with no fans, we do still have TV, and baseball makes a vast amount of their money, a majority of their money, on TV broadcasts. So some teams are better than other than that. The Yankees are certainly make more on their TV broadcasts than the Royals make on their broadcasts. But there is an outlet to play those games, to see those games, for fans to experience those games just differently than they have in the past. And I also think that there is still some hope that as the weather changes and warms up across the country, that this that'll coincide with the peak and then the kind of downslide of the – events happening with more people being identified as sick and more people being identified as kind of getting through the process. So, you know, I think be aware of it, but I think that Major League Baseball is going to do what it can, and I'm shocked that I'm saying this, to not upset the fans more than they need to be.
Yeah, and I think
that is up to and including, you know, refunding tickets or giving you credit for future games or whatever that needs to look like. But as much as I, you know, secretly believe that Rob Manfred wants to cancel baseball games more than anything in his life, I do think that the 30 owners who like making money will, you know, correct him on that.
Yeah, well, I think one of the worst takes out there is like the Major League Baseball season is getting suspended before any Astros player. And I'm just like, it makes me question my sanity. What I would say, and I kind of lean the opposite, I kind of think baseball, both selfishly and I think practically, has an opportunity. And I would think that playing the games without fans, knowing they could be televised, and then I would think temporarily suspending blackout rules and all of that stuff so that everyone can watch it would be really a sense of normalcy and something that pretty is abnormal. But honestly, like I said, selfishly, might be an opportunity for the game to kind of get reintroduced to people who have long since forgotten it.
It would be very interesting to me if this is what it took for baseball to revisit its antiquated blackout and territory restrictions. I don't want to say there's a positive outcome out of a pandemic, but that would be a very interesting way for Major League Baseball to approach something that is maybe one of the least fan-friendly things that they do. And there's a big list of things that Major League Baseball does that are not fan-friendly. But the idea that I can't pay to watch a baseball game from my home, regardless of where it is in 2020, the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, Major League Soccer have all given up that idea. Major League Baseball, like a lot of things, they're still holding on to that so desperately. I don't think there's so much crossover, for instance, in Texas between the Rangers and the Astros that you're not going to attend a game so you can go sit home and watch a Rangers game if you're sitting in Houston. That's not a reality for most people. And the people who don't live in those two cities, in San Antonio, I should get to choose what team I want to follow.
Oh, and I mean, I'm in Austin, and that is my issue. I'm in both teams' zone, so can get neither.
Yeah, and that's the ridiculous thing that Major League Baseball needs to address. And if this drives them to address that, even temporarily, I think they'd see that you have a lot more subscribers to their MLB TV product and other streaming platforms that would allow more fans to get more engaged with the teams they want to get engaged with.
I think that's a really, really good point. And I do hope that they kind of, I mean, we're asking baseball to do something completely driven by outside factors, which they don't always do. But let's jump into some Astros stuff, because that is ultimately what we want to talk about. And I think we've seen two positives with spring training so far, things maybe we didn't expect to see. And I want to start with the negative. So I'm sorry, we've seen one positive, one negative. Let's start with the negative. Forrest Whitley, man, has not looked great. And maybe I'm colored by Chandler Rome's article about how he's not really listening to anybody and doing what he thinks is best. What do you think that means for the outlook of his future as an Astros ace? And now, I mean, his trade value.
Disappointment's really the only word I can come up with. I'd like to use a more flowery word, but that's really it. He's a guy who has been given every opportunity, has been advanced maybe a little bit too fast, but has advanced through the ranks after being drafted out of San Antonio to play for a team that he claims to have rooted for as a child, and has proceeded to kind of piss away all those opportunities one after the other. It really surfaced last year. There's always been kind of questions about maturity, and you're going to have that with any 22-year-old, 21-year-old, except for Juan Soto, who is 21.
By the way, newsflash.
In case you didn't know, only 21. But Whitley's a guy that got advanced to AAA, and then proceeded to experience a lot of fun times with his friends in Austin while he was in Round Rock, and had a 17-something ERA, or maybe I'm thinking of this spring, but it was a bad number, and got demoted. And then you compound that with the fact that he doesn't take care of himself physically and is prone to injury. It's just, it's not a good look. And so I think Lunau, right, wrong, or indifferent, felt that he could very much coax this guy along, bring him through, whether it was tough love or give him a hug every now and then, but bring him up and kind of be the centerpiece of the whole draft philosophy for pitchers for the Astros. And Forrest has proceeded to kind of crap on those plans all the way through, to the point where he now has Brett Strom trying to give him attention and instruction, and he doesn't appear to be following it. Now, I will absolutely say I don't know the conversations between those two gentlemen during spring training, but I can't imagine what we saw yesterday is anything that the coaching staff told him to do, where he basically gave up five runs just throwing meatballs to the Nationals. And not the good Nationals, the AAA Nationals. It's concerning because there doesn't seem to be, like, I'm working on changeups, or Verlander gives up a home run to Goldschmidt. Well, I threw him seven fastballs in a row because I'm working on my fastball today. That wasn't the thing. He was trying actively, and only by the grace of some great defense by the players behind him did he not give up more runs in his appearance. And he's sitting here in 3 weeks into spring training with a 750 ERA, a 1.5 whip, a 240 batting average against. There are no stats that look good for him. I'm not even getting into the advanced stats with FIP and those kind of things. He gives up too many hits. He allows too many base runners. He doesn't strike out enough for what he does, for his, the stuff that he has, which means his approach is not great. You bring up trade value. I don't know that he has a trade value right now, because he's a guy that hasn't proven he can pitch consistently in AAA, much less the major leagues. All of a sudden, a guy like Brian Abreu's got a much clearer path and a much brighter future than Forrest Whitley.
So I guess my thing, and the reason why I asked about the trade value, is it is no secret that we are going to be without Verlander for a couple of weeks. The concept of you don't think that his promise is enough for some team to even at this point trade him for a mid-level starter that's a journeyman that can give us 150 innings? Like, is that really how far he's fallen in your opinion?
I think it would have to be somebody who still buys into the evaluation that Lunau had. Now, he's still our top prospect with the most recent rankings that I guess Baseball America does. He's still the number one guy in our system, but I think it's falling fast. And so I don't think anything fixes that for him other than performance. He's going to end up being assigned to Round Rock, most likely. I don't think it's a safe bet, but it's probably most likely outcome, because I think there's still some question based on his performance. But he's going to have to basically take a full half year, so up until the All-Star break, really, June, with performance and no behavioral issues and no injuries. If he does that, then there's a market for him. There's no market for him right now. There's no squeeze that's going to be worth the juice of trading him. And honestly, the Astros have a rotation that they can get by with the first month of the season, if that's how long Verlander takes. I'm not convinced that's how long Verlander's going to take. But you've got Greinke, you've got McCullers, you've got Urquidy, Josh James, and then you've got a fifth spot that could be manned by Austin Pruitt or by Brian Abreu. And I'm more excited about one of those fifth options than the other, but that's a workable rotation, and still a rotation that's better than half a baseball, getting through the first month if you had to go that far.
Which of the fifth starters are you a fan of? Like I'm kind of back.
I would
on...
rather see.
Go ahead.
If Verlander's long-term, I would rather see Abreu start in Houston, even if he's going to eventually get sent down to continue to start in Round Rock. His future should be, I think, as a starter with this organization. I think he's got very good stuff. I think he's shown incredible poise in his minor league starts, and he's had major league success, which I think is probably the most important thing. So he's got some things he can build on. Pruitt's not a bad option, but he's a soft tosser. He is a less effective or less impressive Dallas Keuchel, and he's going to pitch to contact. And that's fine if we're playing good defense that day, but, you know, the days that Correa has looked bad in the field this year, and I don't know what that's about. I hope it's just lack of care in spring training. But if you don't have a shortstop who's going to field everything that you're allowing them to hit, then I don't know how much a pitch to contact guy works in baseball in 2020. So if I'm getting my choice, it'd be Abreu. I also have heard Dusty Baker and James Click say really great things about Pruitt. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine. But
well,
I think
and Mike Trout said really great things about Framber Valdez. I mean, do we trust the fact that he was erratic? Like, do we think the talent, have we seen the ceiling of his talent, or do you think that he could still, you know, he's still a young guy?
I would love for Framber for the switch to turn on for him, because it's not his stuff. That's not the issue. It is just approach. He's got incredible breaking stuff. He's got a decent enough fastball to work against that breaking stuff, but he just throws the wrong pitch in the wrong situation, and it happens time and time again. And it's most especial. It shows up most when he's facing right-handed batters, as you would expect not to happen being a lefty. The one benefit he has is as a left-handed pitcher. I'd love to see him on the roster in Houston, but as the left-handed specialist, as somebody that Dusty Baker can put in situations where he can get success in small doses. I don't think he needs to be your swing starter. I don't think he needs to be your innings eater out of the bullpen. He needs to be a guy who is given opportunities to succeed. And that gets weirder with the rule changes for relief pitchers now, where you have to face three hitters. So it might be a hard mountain to climb for him, but all he needs is a little taste of success and some consistency, because he's got great, great stuff. It's just the approach that is lacking, and that there's nothing other than doing it that's going to fix what's between his ears.
All right, so let's jump into a little bit of positive real quick before we wrap up. And that's been Miles Straw's had an amazing camp. He has, he's hit for power. He's hit for speed. He's obviously can run. He's hit for average. Can you see a situation where he becomes something more than the utility outfielder? I mean, do you feel like it's so, we're so locked into him basically being the Jake Marisnyk this year?
I think the answer to your question is yes, next year, because there's a whole lot of outfield opportunity next year in Houston. I think that Brantley and Springer are locked in left field and center field, and this is all, of course, you know, barring injury. I think that you've got a rotation, and I don't know how that platoon is going to work out between Reddick and Tucker and Wright. You've even seen Tucker playing a little bit of first base. I think Straw should get his chances. I think he's earned his chances, but I don't think his overall package is going to play better than certainly Brantley and Springer. I think that Baker is going to give Reddick all the benefit of the doubt, at least at the beginning of the season, because Baker historically has favored veterans, and that's what Reddick has over everybody. Reddick's had a putrid spring, but I don't know that Reddick has ever had a great spring. I'm not necessarily worried about him. I'm more worried about Reddick from the standpoint of we've seen the last 2 years him start fast and then tail off and disappear. And in that case, it's a great situation to have somebody like a Miles Straw who's going to get playing time, who is going to be the Jake Marisnyk, as you mentioned, for the first part of the season. But if Tucker doesn't perform to expectations, and he looks like he's hitting better, if Reddick tails off like he has the last couple of years, you've got a ready replacement. You slide Springer over to right field, and you've got a center fielder. And I really do believe, regardless of what Springer decides to do in free agency, Straw's probably your starting center fielder next year.
Oppo Taco, a fan's view of the show.
And so we're jumping into the Oppo Taco segment on Let's Get To with the first appearance of who will be our Cubs expert for the 2020 season, filmmaker and dad and Cubs fan, Mr. Sean Patrick Leonard. How's it going, man?
It's good. Thanks for having me on, James. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I'm excited. You know, we've known each other for, man, going on. It's been a minute now, and I know that you had to have been stoked in 2016. So you still look back on that on that year with a lot of fondness, I'm guessing?
Definitely. You know, I mean, even just talking about it or hearing it come out of your mouth, you know, the little goosebumps in my arms and the back of my neck. And yeah, I mean, as a the most glorious night of my life, you know, a long, 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 long time coming. You know, my grandparents and great grandparents, you know, didn't see a Cubs World Series. So the fact that I could with my, at the time, 7-year-old son was pretty magical, but a lot has happened since. And, the team has changed a lot. Obviously we have a new manager and, you know, some new players and things like that. So it's going to be an interesting turnover.
So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, Madden left and goes to the Angels and the Chris Bryant stuff. So tell me a little bit about kind of from the Cubs fans' perspective, because it's interesting because you have the Chris Bryant situation and Astros fans are living through almost the same thing with George Springer, where the clubs took advantage of how the CBA works and now – there's acrimony. So how is that living with Cubs fans right now?
You know, we're kind of like that child stuck in the middle of a divorce, you know, kind of thing. So we're kind of, we're in the middle of we love this guy, you know, I mean, he's 3 years removed from being an MVP. The only issue I personally have with the guy, if anything, is that in clutch situations, he's not quite the guy that you always want to have up to bat. He's a great table setter. And in certain years, he's been, you know, showing some power numbers and able to drive the ball. And he's probably our best base runner. He can get from first to third faster than anybody. But, you know, in those big situations where we really needed him, especially in 17, 18, and 19, it kind of seemed like either injuries were nagging him or something else was going on because he just wasn't quite the same guy. So personally, we want him here for the rest of his career. I mean, he wasn't the number two overall pick and MVP and Rookie of the Year and all those other accolades for nothing. So just to give him away, you know, for maybe a, you know, a couple of draft picks or even, you know, some marginal starter or whatever we're going to get in return seems like this bogus fire sale that, you know, I don't think quite deserve. It feels like we just did the rebuild and now they're quick to kind of rebuild again. And, you know, everybody here says, well, you trade him while you can get value for him. Well, this guy is only like 26 years old. He's in the prime of his career. You know, we have this habit. It's called the Cubs curse. We have many of them, but one of the Cubs curses is that once we send a player away, they go on to have this Hall of Fame career. Now, granted, you know, 5 years in, he's had an amazing start to his career here in Chicago. I just wouldn't want to sell this guy or get rid of him. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's a first ballot unanimous Hall of Famer. And we go, man, why didn't we keep that guy? So I think as fans, we are a little confused by the entire situation. We don't, if you're a Cubs fan and you know about agents and things like that, I mean, he's got the most powerful agent in sports probably. And that guy wants, you know, $300 to $400 million for a guy that's only averaged 25 to 30 home runs, you know, and hit like 275 in the past 3 or 4 years. I don't know if, you know, we're necessarily, you know, ready to give him all that money. So one thing that on the south side of Chicago that they've been doing, which I find pretty interesting, is they've been signing guys for a decent dollar amount, like $70, $80, $90 million, but for only like 3 years, you know? So I was thinking maybe we can do something like that, still keep them in control for another couple of years, especially if everybody does jump ship. That's what we're a little worried about, is the fact that not only with Bryant, but Baez's contract is up. Rizzo, his extension is getting close. Contreras only has 1 or 2 more years. I mean, this is like really close for the entire thing to break apart. And I don't think as fans, we're ready to see that happen.
You brought up something, and I didn't really mean for this to become a CBA conversation, but it's about to, because I do think that there's something to the economics in baseball that maybe are a little bit broken. And it's because, like as you know, I'm an Astros fan and have been one all my life. And that was always our excuse of, well, we got to trade him while he has value. We've always looked at the Cubs as being one of the few teams that could afford to pay dudes. So it seems interesting that that's the same thing that they're saying to you guys.
Well, it's funny too that you say that as well, because, you know, we're, unless you buy this new marquee sports network package that the Cubs have rolled out this season, we can't even watch the games, right? So, but this was the big problem. Say, hey, we're going to roll a great new network. It's going to be called the Marquee Sports Network. We're going to generate all this money, and we're going to be able to invest it in all these players. So don't you worry, everybody, for your $5 or $10 a month. You know, that's all going towards the players. It's all going towards everything. And yet we all sit back and we keep calling into sports radio saying, hey, how come the Cubs have been, you know, we suddenly just rolling out this new network, but yet we didn't sign any free agents this year. We haven't, you know, and when Ricketts gets on the line, our owner, he just says, oh, we don't have any money. We don't have any money. We don't have any money. And yet we sit there and go, well, wait a second. A lot of us have already pre-signed up for games and all this stuff through your magical, you know, marquee network. Where's the free agent? So I do feel like there's some hornswoggling going on a little bit there, and we're a little confused as well. So I think, you know, our owners are going to say, well, we invested all this money, not only in players, but, and they did, they invested a lot of money in the Wrigleyville area. They kind of, you know, they put a lot into the hotels and the stays around the area and the actual building itself. They've kind of renovated it and things like that. So I understand it was like a $3-4 billion deal, but at the same time, we are in our window. And our window is closing. So if we're going to win, we got to do it right now.
Yeah, especially building a building or improving a hotel. Yes, it's an investment, but that puts money back in the club. And as a fan, you've now created a direct financial investment, hoping that you're going to get to see that money turned out to something on the field.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we waited 108 years for this. We finally got our payoff, but, you know, this is supposed to be a quote unquote dynasty. And though, yes, we have gotten to the playoffs the last, you know, 4 out of 5 years, we're not reinvesting in the ball club here. I mean, yes, the amenities are nice. And yes, you know, the new clubhouse are nice for the players and everything. But again, where's our money going? You know, because ticket sales aren't going down, you know, they're just getting more and more expensive. And, you know, if you want to have, you know, a hot dog and a beer, it's still going to cost you $50 kind of thing. So we're a little confused as to what kind of is happening right now, at least what they say. Now, on the other hand, on the actual what is going on the field type of thing, yes, they haven't rolled out the season yet or anything like that. But me personally, I love Joe Maddon. He will always get a free steak dinner whenever he comes into town. But I do personally think that maybe his time here was over. I think that, you know, these players just didn't, he was too laid back for them, you know, and it worked in 2015, 2016, but you can tell that, you know, the rings luster started to go after the 17 season. And then we just forgot how to hit in 18 and 19, you know, at the end of the stretch. And we fell on our face. So we bring in a guy who was on the 16 team and David Ross, who this guy's got fire, man. You know, I mean, yes, he can dance and win Dancing with the Stars and all that. That's one thing. But the fact that, you know, this guy's a former catcher, you know, he can handle a pitching staff. He's, if you watch any of the videos from the 16 run, you know, I mean, this is the guy that they had the mic on the most because he was their leader. Which is kind of weird that, you know, a veteran 16-year-old backup catcher is the guy that's going to help lead you to the promised land. But I really like the choice. I know that he's not the sexy pick because he doesn't have, you know, all of the managerial records or anything like that. But I look at Aaron Boone, who did, you know, was in the exact same position.
Right.
And now this guy's coming off 200, you know, 100 win seasons back to back. And they're one of the favorites to go to the World Series.
Not saying that the Cubs are right there, but at the same time, I think that this guy offers a lot to the team. And I think that they're actually going to play so much better for him this year than they did in the past two.
This is where I make a sarcastic comment where I also saw my baseball team be influenced by a veteran in 2017, and it got everyone right in trouble. So coming out of the – well, I want to ask one thing. From your perspective, you know, in 2019, there was a real tragedy at Minute Maid Park where Albert Almora Jr. – I think everybody in the baseball world saw what happened and just –
yes.
Ever a baseball game. I've never seen 18 guys on two baseball teams go through the motion more than that game. What was the reaction in Chicago when you guys saw all that happen?
You know, it's interesting because I think it was kind of split. Meaning, I think, you know, 100% a girl that got hit by the ball and everything like that. But the real debate really started to come down to is whether or not we need to extend, you know, the netting and everything like that. And there were a lot of people that actually were so animate against it. And, you know, I sat there and thought to myself, and of course I can't speak for everybody else, but I'm like, okay, I've seen the netting before. You can see through it just fine.
Right.
Let's say my wife accidentally calls me, you know, and something's going on with my other child that she has to talk to me on the phone. I'm not watching the game at that second. And, you know, Almora rips another one off the end of his bat and my son's not looking and, you know, now what? So I was all for like, let's put the netting up. I don't care. I mean, how many times have I caught a foul ball in my life? 0.00, you know? So yeah. I'm not exactly like, oh man, keep the netting down so I can catch my foul ball. No. I think that if anything, we all wanted that little girl to be okay. And we found out recently that I guess she is going to have a traumatic brain injury for the rest of her life. And I mean, I can only imagine what, you know, Almora is going through and will go through for the rest of his life. It's kind of like, you know, running somebody over with your car in a way. This person is never going to be the same. So I like the fact that they're extending the netting. And the fact that it won't hinder my view or sight or anything like that, as long as it protects people, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think the last time I was at a Minute Maid game, it took me about a minute and a half to get used to the – because they changed the netting there. So, Sean, thanks so much for being on. Like I said, we're going to have you on about at least once a month just to keep talking your Cubbies.
That's great.
So as we wrap up the Oppo Taco segment today, we're going to be joined by Cam Doherty, our main guy behind the Dodgers. And he just got back from spring training. So tell us all about it, man. How was it?
Well, this is the first time that I took my wife and daughter with me. Usually I go with a buddy of mine. So my wife and daughter made the trip this year. And I don't think she really understood what 5.5-6 hour drive was. And
oh no.
She was really surprised that many people travel that far to watch practice games. And I'm like, spring training is a completely different entity, in my opinion, than going to regular season games. I enjoy going to spring training games more than regular season or even playoff games. The intimacy factor is much better.
Yeah.
I played baseball until I was 17. So I kind of don't mind watching guys do first base drills. I think it's a little interesting, I guess, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But this year was fun. It was, you know, with the coronavirus scare, getting autographs and things like that were very scarce. So I only saw a few players sign for a few people and then kind of, you know, move their way around and whatnot. But overall, I had a good time. Got to go to Whataburger. If no one's ever been to a Whataburger, you definitely have to do that at least once in your life. The second game we went to, the Dodgers, and they played the Reds. The Reds' new first base coach is world-renowned Dodger second baseman Delino DeShields.
Oh, wow. Anybody remember? Wow.
Mid-90s when I always like to refer like 96 to about 2004 as my favorite time as being a Dodger fan because the Dodgers were terrible. You could go to a game and it wasn't expensive. It wasn't selling out. You could easily move to like the field section and it wasn't a big deal because no one wanted to watch like a 75 win team anyways. So I chatted with him for a moment. You know, he threw me a ball and stuff like that. So that was a cool thing. But overall, you know, good experience. If you've never made a trip to a spring training game, at least go for 2 days, take in a game at a different ballpark. I like Camelback Ranch, but it's not the best stadium in Arizona. I feel like Goodyear or Kauffman Stadium. Kauffman where the Royals and Rangers play and Goodyear where the Indians and Reds play. I feel like those have been the best ones I've Haven't been to the new Cubs stadium, which I'll probably go to next season. But overall, I mean, spring training is a good time. It's a time to really enjoy the game, because when you go to a regular season game, there's glitz and glamour. And, you know, if you're not really close, you can kind of get distracted. And at a spring training game, you know, you're all focused on the players.
So there's a lot to unpack there, because and I'm really glad you're able to jump on with us, because on St. Patrick's Day, I'm flying to spring training, coronavirus notwithstanding. So, and we are going to go to the Astros Park at West Palm, and then we're going to go watch the Marlins. But there's a Whataburger in Arizona?
They start in Phoenix. So, yeah, there's like six or seven in the greater Phoenix area, and all those Surprise and Peoria and Goodyear and all those cities are within 10 minutes of Phoenix. So it's like a greater metropolis area. So yeah, there's a bunch of them out there.
Wow. Okay. So I hope it's just as good. So, you know, you talked about just the access. So for those of us who've never made it out, and like kind of a tip for what I should do when I finally get there, what can I expect? Like, will I be able to go watch like PFPs or just practice, or how much of it's closed off versus how much of it are you able to get out to?
Well, my experiences in Arizona, I've been to spring training four different times now. And I mean, if you get there, like most games take place during the day. There's very few night games, which the Dodgers are really opposed to. They're continuing to try to get them to let them play night games, because if you look at the Dodgers' schedule, or pretty much most West Coast teams' base schedule, at least 100 to 110 of their games are played 5:40 at night or later. I mean, there's very few day games. If they're on the road, like when they go to St. Louis, they'll play the, you know, 11, 12, 1 o'clock games.
Right.
So the Dodgers really lobby for more night games, and the pitchers especially, because how are you supposed to really prepare for a season when you're not playing in the temperatures or the atmosphere that you would play in, you know, during the regular season. But I mean, I feel like, you know, if you get there at 9 in the morning, 10 in the morning, 3 or 4 hours before a game, and you watch practice, and how it works at Camelback, I've never really went to practices at other stadiums. I've just gone to the games. But how it works at Camelback, they split with the White Sox, is there's just like a giant walkway, and on the right, the White Sox, and on the left, the Dodgers. And there's about 3 or 4 fields per team. And if you kind of just hang out there, you'll watch them practice, players coming and going to get autographs. In 2017, my buddy and I were there, and we were kind of just hanging out, because we were going to a game at Camelback, and that's where they have the bobblehead area and stuff in between the practice fields. And we're kind of just standing there, and a guy walks by and says, "Hey, if I were you guys, I wouldn't move for the next 10 or 15 minutes. And we're like, okay. So we're standing there, and then, you know, they put out a little makeshift sign that says autograph signing. And I'm like, oh, cool. They're going to, you know, someone's going to come out and sign. And I'm like, okay, cool. So we're standing there, and a line starts to form, and a bunch of people start to get in line, and they cut the line off after 40 or 50 people. And out comes Tommy Lasorda. So I'm like the first in line to meet Tommy Lasorda for free, take a picture, all that stuff. So things like that can happen. Like I said, if it wasn't for this year, you know, with the virus and stuff like that going along, it's just, I mean, really easy access, especially for children. I mean, I think that's one of the things too. If you have a kid that plays baseball, or maybe wants to play baseball, that's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, you take them to a spring training game, they get to interact with people they see on TV, as opposed to a regular game where you have a very slim chance of getting a ball, and you have a better chance of winning the lottery than getting an autograph at a regular season game. So that right there will help the younger generation see players up close and personal, get to talk to them for a moment. So I think that's one of those lasting things. Like, I wasn't able to do that as a kid because the Dodgers used to practice in Florida. So now that they're in Arizona, my friend that I usually go with, he takes his sons, because it's just I think it's just the best way to kind of introduce the younger generation to baseball.
So you guys added Dodgers camp, and I just clicked on Fangraphs to get the updated projections, and the Dodgers are projected to win the World Series over the Astros. So I guess we can arm wrestle at the end of the season if that happens. But clearly the Dodgers go in with a stacked team and really no questions of consequence. Was that energy there? Like, could people feel like we're about to watch something special this season?
Well, I've been to a few, I've been to 10 spring training games. I've never really, and this one was considered an away game because we were playing at Goodyear, the Red Stadium. So on the Dodgers side, where the visitor dugout was, it was pretty full of Dodger fans. Let's go Dodgers, chanting for Mookie, you know, chanting the entire game, even though they lost. Getting to see David Price, even though his first outing wasn't very good, but his last outing was special. I think a lot of feelings I was talking to people at the stadium, we've been just so, I don't even want to say fortunate or blessed, or we should be appreciative of the 7 straight division titles, but it's championship or bust, in my opinion. I mean, especially now with the bullpen pieces, with Broussarder, with Kenley feeling 100% better, with Kershaw already touching 93 in early March. I mean, unless something catastrophic happens, and barring a lot of injuries or coronavirus canceling the season, I think if the Dodgers don't win the World Series this year, it's maybe going to go down as one of the biggest failures in sports history.
Well, listen, we're going to have our pick show in a couple of weeks, and I have migrated from, oh, I was picking the Yankees, and then the Mookie thing happened, and then I'm deciding to get it in my foxhole. But look, I think that if you look at the other two contenders for it, if you look at the Yankees and the Astros, they're all dealing with how are we going to actually piece this thing together? And the Dodgers feel like of all of those teams are the ones who actually can have a thing or two happen and survive. I think it's not even just the starting nine and the rotation. I think they are the deepest team in baseball.
I mean, I think without question, I mean, when Gavin Lux is kind of maybe sort of might start in AAA, that kind of shows the depth of the Dodger system. I think one of the good things about the Dodgers, and they've done well over the past few years, is that when injuries do happen, Kershaw hasn't pitched a full season since his MVP year. When things like that do happen, I think we have so much depth, especially in the pitching position, that, you know, we could wiggle through. And that's one of the beautiful things about baseball as opposed to the NBA or the NFL, is you can have a bad stretch. You know, you can lose 12 out of 14 in the middle of July and it means nothing come October. So I think, you know, this team, I think, is built for, like I said, when we first did the show with you, I think what I've been saying for years is that shoring up the leadoff spot, and we couldn't have done it anymore with Mookie Betts. I want to once again thank the Red Sox front office for accepting Connor Wong and Jeter Downs as replaceable players for Grital, David Price, and Mookie Betts. I mean, just brilliant on the Red Sox front office part, like just so brilliant.
I'm sensing some sarcasm.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, especially now Grital is coming out there hitting 100 miles an hour consistently, and like his slider nasty at 92. It's like, you guys could have had him. You know that, right? You're like, no, we don't want him. And they're like, are you sure? You sure you don't want him? No, we don't want him. Okay, we'll take him.
Well, that's so
sorry.
No, I'm really looking forward to kind of following this season with you. I think it's going to be special.
Yeah, I hope so, man. I just, at this point, I mean, like I said, years ago, it was like, okay, happy to be in the race, lose to the Cubs, lose to the Cardinals, all that stuff. But now I just think the way like our team just stacks up, that, I mean, either it's just going to be really catastrophic. Like, we're going to be like the Seattle Mariners in the 90s when they won 120 games and still didn't make it to the World Series.
I just don't see that happening. But yeah, we can't wait to follow us with you, Cam. Thanks so much for joining us on Let's Get Two.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Talk to you guys next time.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
And so that does wrap up what admittedly is a very weird, erratic, a little bit all over the place episode of Let's Get Two. I want to thank Sean for coming on and talking a little Cubbies. Thank Cam for giving us a little insight into spring training since one of us got to go. I want to thank Scott for talking, basically doing 3 segments in the last 36 hours because the information kept changing and we wanted to be as current as possible. Thanks, Andy, for coming on and talking Go-Go Astros and how this is going to affect them. I want to thank Dr. Wesley Long for coming on and talking, you know, giving us some real medical stuff. This isn't a joke. And I know that there have been a lot of jokes about the disease. There have been a lot of people who have said things like, well, 2 more weeks and I can get JV back, or I can get Aaron Judge back, or Giancarlo Stanton, or whoever else is on the MASH list that is a Yankees roster. And I'm not one that says you can't joke at these things. Anybody that's ever been in the military knows somebody who's been in the military knows that gallows humor is a big part of our arsenal. And there's no situation, as depressing as it might be, that I can't make a joke about. I just think we got to be careful. I think we got to be careful who we make the jokes to and how loud we make them, because now our voices go farther and it can be just a little bit insensitive, and a lack of sensitivity isn't a weak, or I'm sorry, lack of sensitivity isn't a strength. I'm a snowflake. Trust me, I'm not a snowflake. Trust me, I'm not any of those things. It just seems like publicly thanking a pandemic because the player you want that was a little nicked up can now start a season on time is bad form. And I hate that the baseball season has delayed. I hate that spring training has been eliminated, the rest of it. I'm sitting here recording this in a Kissimmee Cobras t-shirt that I bought specifically to wear in spring training for the first time. I remember when I found out what spring training was when I was like 8 years old. And my grandfather, when I asked, I said, what is Kissimmee St. Cloud? Why are the Astros playing there? And he explained it to me. And ever since then, I wanted to go. And my wife told me last Christmas, that's your birthday present. We're going. For the first time ever, I bought season tickets to the Astros. Now, granted, it's a small plan. I don't have that kind of money. Plus, I travel too much for the show and live too far away. But yeah, I'm as disappointed as anybody. I'm heartbroken that the season isn't starting on time. As heartbroken as I am, it's the right decision. We have to know what these things are. We have to know what exactly we're dealing with. So I just encourage a couple things. I encourage people to not fall into the traps of only listening to the news they already agree with. Every single major news outlet has a bias. Every single major news outlet is pitching to a group of people that agree with them to get them to watch or to click. It is the way it works. The minute that most of our news became served to us on for-pay cable networks, that became part of the reality when it comes to the Fourth Estate. I have my own political opinions, and generally speaking, I watch media I agree with. But this is not something to trifle with. And so I hope that you listen to all sorts of media, that you will go to the World Health Organization's website and the CDC and try to figure out what's really going on and what really needs to happen. Because people dismissing this, that it's just some flu, they're doing it wrong. And I think in no area in the last 10 years has the danger of social media really shown through than this one, where the desire to be first is more important than the desire to be right. That they don't care that they're sharing misinformation, and they don't care that they're ignoring the nuance. That, yeah, people in my age bracket, generally speaking, aren't dying of this thing, but that the long incubation period, as best I can tell, makes it dangerous because I can spread it to people without even knowing. So yes, these are all inconvenient. I live in Austin. South by Southwest is a big part of our economy, and my heart goes out to, it doesn't go out to the filmmakers. Honestly, mostly South by Southwest plays established filmmakers or films that already have Hollywood distribution. I'm not interested in that. But what I do care about are the waiters and the people that drive Uber and the people that bartend, that the service industry that's dependent on that event, or the people that work the rodeo, or the retirees that work a couple hours a week at the Astros game to make a little money to make ends meet. Those are the people that I'm worried about. Sports is a multi-billion dollar industry. They didn't cancel these games lightly. And so educate yourself, be smart. And I think that we're going to go through this. Like, I do think that we will get through this, that when baseball finally comes back, it won't be that dissimilar to 9/11 when we are just excited that it's back. And so I just think, in the meantime, you know, try to be nice to each other, try to be respectful, try to be smart. We are going to keep making episodes for you, and we're going to try to keep it fresh and fun and even a little bit weird. Scott and I have some fun plans. So just, again, take care of yourselves, be smart, and let this thing run its course, and then we'll be back before you know it. Next week, we have a great episode planned. We have a couple of extra guests we're working on in light of the MILB also canceling or suspending their start of their season. We're going to be talking to SaveMILB.org. A little bit about the effort to keep contraction from happening. The Kannapolis Cannonballers are coming on to talk a little bit about their rebrand. And we're going to be talking, because it's going to be St. Patrick's Day, about baseball in Ireland. It's going to be a lot of fun. So hope to see you back in just a few days. And until then, make sure you wash your hands. Sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game twice while you're washing your hands. Make sure you cough into your sleeve. Stay within five people's spittle difference, and let's get to it.